listening to Shop Talk with your host, Kevin Tates. Brought to you by Eastwood Tools. Everything you need to do the job right.
Hey, you're listening to Shop Talk. I'm your host, Kevin Tates, and today we're talking to John Bouchard, or John Bouchard Jr. Either way, he'll come when you call him, as long as you don't call him late for dinner. John, how are you doing, man?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Well, if you guys don't recognize his name yet, you will from John Bouchard Racing Engines. But those of you that do, you know that he hosted or co-hosted the Horsepower TV show for 3 years. So if you know his voice from the show, then we'll send you a Christmas ham or something like that. But John's here with us talking, and we're just going to shoot it a little bit. And I mad respect for you, John. I wanted to say that everything that you guys put together on the show, I heard engines because our studios from Trucks and Horsepower were sisters, and there's just a sheetrock wall between them. And we heard engines spinning up 7,500 RPM, just crazy. Nothing that you built on that show ever let go. So does that make you feel pretty good?
Well, it does. I mean, there were a lot of nerve-wracking moments in there because I'm not scared to turn them up. I'll turn a wick up on them. But, you know, the Horsepower TV show was a little nerve-wracking for me because when it come off of the engine stand, it went straight to the dyno and had to perform just like real life. There's no mistakes in engine building, so... Yeah. It was nerve-wracking but fun.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people don't know that haven't done TV. The timeline is crazy. It's almost like NASCAR. You jump out of one show and jump right into the next one. You're planning for a third and a fourth one ahead of it. How – is there any analogy or is there anything similar to building race engines and doing that TV show?
Absolutely. Believe it or not, you always have three or four engines going. So when you get to a certain point on one and something's wrong, which always happens – anytime you're building a custom engine, it's like a custom car. It's an offset. You change one thing, and the rest offsets down the line. So just, I mean, the same exact thing. You always have two or three projects going so that you can pull something out of the corner and start working on it when something else you're waiting on shipping.
Yeah, we did the same thing on trucks. Ryan would be working on something on one side of the room, and I'd be doing TV on the other side because people, a lot of people don't know that we don't have a B crew on those shows. It's us. And sink or swim, it's us.
That is 100% correct. And I was cool with that, but that is 100% correct. Every motor that I built on that show was designed. Most of them were machined by me off camera or sometimes on camera. Mm. When we go to the machine shop, that was the machine shop. That guys come around on Saturdays, and they still see me there.
Yeah.
I still do my work there. So it was 100% legit. If it didn't run good, it was on me. If it run good, it was on me.
Yeah, and if something catastrophic goes wrong, TV doesn't get made, and that's a really bad thing with that schedule.
That would have probably been somebody else's fault, but it would have been mine.
I'm kidding.
But
well, let's back up just a little bit. How did you get started being a gearhead? What really started, no pun intended, turning the wheels when you were a kid?
It's very simple for me. As a kid, I liked hot rods, different stuff, but there was always something inside me that wanted to see the engine. The paint was great. The wheels are great. Lower, jacked up. Yeah. Interior, exterior, that's all fun, but I wanted to know what was under the hood.
Yeah.
So in Iraq and being in the infantry and doing all the stuff I did there, I kind of told myself when I got done, I'm going to build one small block V8. That's my goal. I'll pay for it. If I don't use it, I'll throw it in the lake. Whatever happens, happens, but I'm going to build one. And one turned into two turned into three turned into four, and then it was like, well, I don't want to go back to Iraq, so it's cool. It's fine with me.
Yeah. Well, you opened the door. Speaking of Iraq, tell everybody which branch of the forces you were in.
I am a United States Marine. I was in the Marine Corps Infantry, 3rd Battalion, 8th Marines, India Company. I was 2nd Platoon, 2nd Squad Leader for a while.
Wow, cool. Well, I'm sure everybody listening will chime in with me and say thank you for your service.
Well, you're welcome. It was one of those things. I was 18. Like a lot of young men, they didn't want to stay at home. They weren't going to college, and working wasn't a cool option.
Yeah.
So, you know, sign up and go.
Yep. Well, the guys that I know that are, starting with my father-in-law, Howard L. Copeland, he was a 22-year Navy vet, retired a Master Chief, and was an electronics instructor in the Navy. That – training for him filtered down into his civilian life. He had two other careers past his Navy career in civilian life, and just the way it changed his mind, because he enlisted in World War II, and it just changed his way of thinking into a very methodical, very organized way of not only thinking and working, but looking at things. Did the Corps have the same effect on you?
I think so. We always like to say in the infantry, especially when we're doing urban operations, slow is smooth, smooth is fast. So if you want to be fast at something, you need to be smooth at it. And if you want to be smooth at something, you need to take your time and do it slow. And everything has to be corrected. And the Marine Corps prepared me with a lot of the stress, like for the TV show and for some of these $20,000 and $30,000 engines that I build, that you only get one shot at some of this stuff. So if your route's not planned route, you take the wrong route and you get attacked, you know what I mean? Somebody can die.
Yeah.
It's not that serious here, but the engine can die.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And somebody can lose a lot of money, whether it's a customer or me. Somebody's got to pay for it.
Yeah.
So the whole one shot to get this right just came right on over. It was just a natural by effect of the Marine Corps. It had to be right.
Yeah.
You know?
And we,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say it's cool that that translates and helps you with your secondary career building very impressive and powerful engines.
Well, I like to think so. We like to say that perfection can be achieved with enough perfection. We like to say in the infantry that perfection can be achieved with enough preparation.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like with body, you know, painting the car, you will probably tell me, is not that hard of a job.
No. But what I tell people is that's the reward for all the prep work.
Exactly. All the machine work, all the sanding, all that to get to paint it.
Yeah.
You know, of course, then you have to go back and wet sand and do more, but I get to go to the dyno and I'm done. But that's basically the same thing, you know, measuring the cylinder heads and doing the valve job and all the clearances set. When everything's finally done, you get to go take a shower, clean up, and put the motor together.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, the payoff for me was getting to assemble. I always enjoyed assembling the motors.
Yeah. Well, obviously you get a sense of satisfaction, and it's fairly short term. When you're putting a high-end engine together, when you know you've done your job, you know you've done your prep work, and you've got a pretty good inkling that everything's going to fall together in the right place, don't you?
Yeah, I'd say there's a little bit of hope in there too, you know what I mean? I have done like some Chrysler stuff, and every motor's different, but like you get a wedge style Chrysler head, and if you don't have the valve train geometry right, it will spit the push rods out.
Yeah,
it's not going to take it. You know, you can take a bone stock Chevy and almost just do whatever you want, and the thing will run for a certain amount of time.
Yeah,
how long, how much oil pressure, yada yada yada, may not be what we're looking for, but will it run and spin over? I've seen some wild stuff actually still running.
Well, you know, Tommy Boscher's from Detroit Muscle, which used to be a muscle car. He talks about the derby cars. They get a loose 305 and pour sand down the intake and try and kill it, and it wouldn't die.
Tommy Boscher's. That's a good buddy of mine. Me and him, I've done some derby stuff for him, and we did one motor for him, and he was just trying to get to the race. It was a hurt motor. Shacklets wouldn't even let us. He wouldn't take the money for the hone. It had so many marks in it, and he wouldn't let us tell anybody he did it.
Yeah.
Tommy finished fourth in that, and it wasn't because the motor went down. It was because of the car, and I called him a liar. There was no way that thing went through all that. And when I talk to him about building these motors, and he does some high-end stuff, coats the heads and intake runners and valves and pistons and all that, and I mean, it takes about an hour to get one of those motors to 180 degrees up to operating temperature. It just takes forever. But what kills me is, man, they lose a radiator hose and they ain't got no water. They're not going to stop the race. They keep running it.
They keep going.
If it locks up, it locks up, you know. And it's, on my end, it's like, you're a jerk, Tommy. You're a jerk. You know, he gets a kick out of it, too, because, you know, me and him come from different schools of that. But that's what they do. And believe it or not, he's got a couple motors that after, you know, all the preparation, they go 2, 3, 4, 5 races before they have to be refreshed. And you're right, the looser the better for them.
Yeah. Well, metal expands when it gets hot, so you build them loose.
That's a scary world, in my opinion.
Man, it's something I find it exciting, but I've never driven a derby car. We built a truck on the show once and didn't get to drive it. Really kind of bummed me out, but whatever. That's a whole other story.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a fun world, and I understand that Tommy actually makes pretty good coin doing it, because he
That's a different kind of racetrack. You go to a Saturday night racetrack in the winter, everybody hates him.
Yeah.
But it's okay.
Yeah.
Tom Bozier sometimes has to roll the windows up and take some help to make sure he gets out of there. Them rednecks, and I got nothing but love for rednecks, but some of them boys get serious about their Saturday night money.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
They, you know, sometimes they'll want to catch you and get hands-on. Now, Bozier's is a big boy, but I've heard of him talk a couple of times where it was time to roll the windows up and get out before somebody catches us.
That's fun stuff. Well, listen, let's change the subjects a little bit. How in the world did you end up, because I honestly don't know the story of how you got the gig on Horsepower TV.
Oh, that's one of those, I guess, maybe divine interventions, we'll say. I've worked at the machine shop. I'd done some security gigs. I was asked to quietly leave that one. That was a completely different story. But I wasn't fired, but I was asked to quit, or I was going to get fired. So I worked at the machine shop in Tommy's Auto Machine in Springfield, Tennessee for several years. And it's been like a revolving door. Those guys are like family to me. And I went up to Ohio. This guy promised me the world to come up there and help him out with his high-end motors. He was getting older and wanted to go to ball practice and leave whenever he wanted to and wanted a go-to guy. So I moved my family up there. Day I get up there, he says, well, I didn't get authority to hire you. So I got a house now. I've got all this stuff. So I went to work for myself, which was really hard because there was three engine shops in that town. I ended up at an import shop doing timing belts. Honest work living is fine with me, but it wasn't what I like to do. So my wife is pregnant. She wasn't having a good time with it, so we ended up moving back. I was helping a buddy of mine that owns a machine shop that actually did some of the work for the tool that we made to do the crank snout repair.
Yeah,
and I was building an engine for them. I do all their engines. And somehow them and Galley just met at the gas station one day or something and started talking. He was needing somebody. And I was I had done all my, online interviews and all the crap you got to do to be a civilian contractor back on base. I was trying to go back overseas as a mechanic, maybe some up armor or doing something like that. I didn't want to do infantry again, but something a little more automotive related. And my buddy Greg called me and said, hey, they're looking for somebody. So I gave my resume and took some headshots, which I figured it was over right then. They're not going to take my hillbilly ass, They're just going to – this is only going to confirm this is a guy we don't want, is what I assumed. But they were in need of somebody, and there's not too many guys here in Tennessee that do this kind of work. There's even fewer that have good reputations at doing the work. So
that's interesting.
It's a small-knit community in Tennessee as far as engine builders. Everybody kind of knows everybody, the big three, and I run parts through them and do machine work with them. I spread the love everywhere I can, but – basically, I called my buddy Greg and said, hey, I got this job on Fort Campbell. All I got to go do is my next interview, and I've got it. You want to call them and see if they're serious? Because he knew Mike had his cell number and all that. I didn't even know where the shops were at. I knew they were in Tennessee, but had no clue. Been watching them. Elmore hates this, but I've been watching them since I was 10. I'm 31. So, he hated that. But anyways, long story short, they called him and was like, hey, this guy's going to take this job. If you want him, you ought to get an interview. And Patty called me that night, and it was 7 or 8 o'clock at night, and said, hey, do you want to come in for an interview? And I said, well, I got to go do the one on base at like 1:30 or something. I'll come see you at 8:30. Came in the morning, rode with Mike, and went in there and talked to him. They made me an official offer right there, and so I took the job right then. I started working that afternoon. She said, you need to give anybody a 2-week notice? No.
Yeah.
Because the machine shop's revolving door. They were all for me getting it.
Yeah, yeah.
And the lady on Fort Campbell wasn't going to let me go back overseas. She wanted me slotted for something at Fort Campbell. And I thought, well, if I'm going to stay here, I might as well give the TV a shot. And
why not?
Paid off. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, my circumstances are different, but the same in a sense. It's just an opportunity that you can't really afford to let go. Just for the what-ifs.
Yeah.
Just for the hope involved.
And several people tell me, don't do that. And I'm like you. I got to see for myself. I would rather hate that I'd done this than always wish I had done it.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No.
So, that was basically how that turned out was, yes, I'm going to try this. And if it don't work, the war hasn't gone anywhere. So if I need to go back and put up armor on vehicles, I will if it gets that bad.
Yeah. Well, and people think that I'm just completely in love with trucks and nothing else because I did a show called Trucks and Truck Tech. But, the truth is I'm a muscle car guy, and that's the cars that I grew up coveting. But it was an opportunity. Stacy had left the show, and it was just one of those things where, it's a door open that you got to walk through, right?
That, you and I differ almost 180 on that because I like cars, but again, I still only care about the motor.
Yeah.
I look at the
yeah.
car and my first question is what's under the hood?
Right.
People ask me all the time, like, what's your favorite car? What do you drive? You know, I've got a Ferrari, a Porsche, a Lamborghini at the house. One's 9 years old, one's 7 years old, and one's 2 years old. I got three kids, so I don't have, you know, a bunch of hot rods and stuff.
Right.
I, you know, don't even really know if I care to, man. I just like building the motors and handing them off.
Yeah.
I've still never to this date built a motor for me.
Really?
Never.
So when's that going to happen?
I don't know. I just bought that truck that you guys built, and it's got one I specced, but Ryan Shan put it together. So, you know, I can't go into a motor that ain't leaking.
Yeah.
I can go into one that might have a little leak and make it better, but if it ain't leaking, it runs good.
Yeah. Well, that truck, I drove that truck. That thing is stout. So.
I took it out. I had to take it out of beast mode. You and Ryan Shan had it in some serious beast mode.
Oh, that was to get that nice 1-2 chirp in the transmission.
Oh, man, I was getting chirps in second and third. My teeth were hurting. My head hit the back a couple of times. I had to get in that handheld and take it out.
That's fun stuff.
So now it's just a nice cruiser. First gear hits pretty tough, but when you want to, I mean, it lights them up and goes, and I enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's the first kind of toy I've ever really had. So.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. You know, and there's the rumor that we crush everything that we build on those shows, and it's absolutely not true. It's probably the third most popular question that comes up with me if I'm at a car show or a trade show.
Oh, yeah?
Well, yeah, because a long time ago, there was a show where I think there was one vehicle. It was kind of a Where Are They Now show that Stacey David did, and there was one vehicle. It was a non-VIN number S10 that came from GM, and it was spec'd for a V8 swap back when that was brand new. That,
uh-huh.
that shows you how long that was.
Yeah.
And the vehicle was... It was a GM Target Master 350 that they threw in it and sent it back up to GM. They have no choice. It's a non-VIN number car. It can never be legally on the road.
Yeah.
So, of course, it gets crushed. It's like a concept vehicle.
Absolutely.
So that really kind of got a urban legend of its own. But, you know, and the reason I'm explaining this to people listening is so you don't ask me anymore when you see us at a show. But so John Bouchard bought one, the 93 Chevy. We called it the Lobuck Sport Truck, and I ended up with Das Bronco, and Ryan bought the Ranger. And and all, you know, so we invest so heavily in these vehicles that they're not going to get crushed.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of people maybe should realize that some of those projects take months of our time.
Months and
all
years.
All day. Yeah,
yeah,
you guys more so than me. Most of those engines are months. You guys work for years on some of those cars.
Right.
And sometimes, I'm sure you feel the same way, and Ryan, that I don't want to let it go. That's my baby now,
no.
So I'm going to write the check and keep it. You
yep.
know what I mean? I want that. The truck I just liked. I knew you guys were going to do a good job. Like I tell everybody, I'll take Ryan Shan's crap over GM's brand-new vehicles any day.
Well, I mean, that's an excellent segue. You needed the truck because you needed a parts runner for John Bouchard Racing Engines.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about that. What? You're not doing the TV show anymore. I'm not doing the TV show anymore. I've got my own stuff. I'm doing a web show with the Eastwood Company,
I've seen that.
Big fun, hands-on cars. It's way fun, and I'm doing a bunch of other stuff, kind of like what I've always done. But I'm not going to ask you why you left because that's none of anybody's business, and it doesn't really matter. Sometimes there's a cycle. It's like I always used to say when I was in the rock and roll industry, you're going to have the perfect band together, but it's not going to be for very long.
That's
people
it.
Jump off the wheel at different times. So it was just time for you to go. It's time for me to go. So... But for you to maybe take some of that momentum that you've got, maybe a little bit of notoriety, having people notice you and see you on TV, do you think that's going to help with your engine shop, or has it already?
It has so far. And I'll be honest with you, that was one of the first rude awakenings with TV that I experienced was going to a car show.
Mm.
You know, because you're on that show for a while before anything airs and before the shows hit and before people start figuring out who you are. And then we're at a car show, and a guy walks up to him, and he's talking to me like he knows me, and he knows my name. He does know who I am.
Yeah.
So much.
Yeah.
And I'm racking my brain trying to figure out who this is. Now, coming from infantry, I'm just trying to step back. I'm trying to walk away from this situation.
Okay.
I didn't like somebody knowing who I was, and I had no clue who he was.
Yeah.
And then, you're on it for a year, and people start knowing, and then, 2 years, and a lot of people know who you are. And... I never really quit building engines on the side when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that kind of became a stress relief after Iraq. It was something I could focus on and do and enjoy doing it as opposed to other things. So I told him even on day one, I will never give up my Saturdays at the shop. I will never give up my evenings building motors. Mm-hmm. And I just toned it down. And then it just kind of, honestly, it kind of got to the point where it was like, you're either going to have to stop building engines on the side and do TV, or you're going to have to stop doing TV and build engines.
Yeah.
And I chose to just build engines.
Yeah.
Wasn't nothing personal with the show. I'm still good friends. They let me come back and buy the truck. You know what I mean?
After
I left. So it's, I mean, you can tell I didn't leave on bad terms. But I told them for about a year, TV was just not for me. Some people like it. Some people, you know, especially on the outside looking in, it's really great. But there's a lot of deadlines. There's a lot of stress. There's a lot of stuff. Yeah. Compiled on the fact that I have to build this $25,000 engine. It's got to run. It's got to run right now. It's got to run right.
Well, and on top of that, you're representing a manufacturer's parts.
Yes.
That they've invested millions of dollars in, and the TV payoff makes or breaks sales for that.
Absolutely.
So that's an added layer of stress.
And that's a, you know, it's a fine line to walk. The guy Holmes wants something that he can actually attain and build.
Yeah.
The manufacturer that gave the parts wants numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some guys at home just want to see numbers.
Yeah.
You know, they just, you know, so you can't ever make everybody happy, but I enjoy building engines. I have a small little shop in Hendersonville, Tennessee. I kind of stick to myself. I don't have employees. If you bring me your motor, I'm the one working on it.
Right.
And, you know, all the other big shops that have employees, their guys are good too.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of those are one job. That's what he does all day. You know, and I like to be able to do everything. I want to go from start to finish, tear it down. I like doing weird stuff. I like putting Chevy rods in Ford motors. You know, I like...
Or a high-powered 4.2 V6 for Rick Bacon.
I mean, I took the 3.8 out of his. We took a late model, 2003, with the roller cam short block, put his 98-style heads on it with the B-high valve spring, some rocker arm upgrades, some other stuff, and, you know, here we go. A couple days ago, I seen on video, he's, you know, white-smoking them in a parking lot out in California. It goes through California missions.
That's awesome.
So, you know, I enjoy the strict, you know, this got to go through emissions, or here's the rule book on this, or I don't have any money, but I want as much power as possible.
Yeah.
What can I do to the castings,
to
the machine work? I'm a big believer in machine work. My motors have a hefty machine shop bill. Nothing gets left untouched.
But that's just part of the discipline of doing it, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, and if I want my name on it and you want me to stand behind that motor when you go to the racetrack, it has to be built to my what I feel needs to be done to it.
Yeah.
So most guys will – some guys are – you know, most guys just let me do whatever I want to. Some guys are pretty good engine guys. They want this block or this crank or this roller. They know the cubic inches they want, yada, yada, yada. And some guys are like, I want 300 horsepower. I want to hit the key when it's cold. And run the air condition if I feel like it.
Yeah.
So we set them up for that. It's just whatever they want. And I enjoy doing that. I like building a guy, you know, something that he worked hard for and spent his money. And I like showing the guys at home how to do it because I was the guy at home. I watched since I was 10 years old. Yeah. I was a nobody. Joined the Marine Corps Infantry. I was still a nobody. I came back. I was again a nobody. Ended up on a TV show. Now, I still think I was a nobody and still am, but people start to think I was somebody. You know,
well,
but
if you're a nobody, you're a nobody that knows how to methodically go through things and really dissect and seemingly enjoy the whole process and really get in that zone of constant improvement. And that's one of the things that I grew to respect about your talents and your skills as an engine builder. And there was just nothing that you weren't excited about. You know?
Well, I always kind of looked at it, and I try to explain this to other people. When you're building something, it's not I have to do this. It's I get to do this, you know, like with your oil pump. Man, four extra bolts, and I can get a cartridge roll, and I can improve oiling.
Yeah.
I can make the motor live longer. If I do this with the camshaft, we get that. If I set the tolerances, we take those GM crate motors, the 604s. All we do is take them down to the service tolerances that they're allowed. Because guys are allowed to refresh them now, and they don't do the bolts and all that no more. If you just simply set it at what GM says, that's the limit, the thing will pick up 40, 50 horsepower.
Yeah.
Put an extra thousandths clearance on the cylinder wall. Yes, the pistons slap a little bit. You don't hear it in a race motor. When it warms up, it's gone.
Yeah.
People in a street car don't want to hear that when they fire the motor up. But in a race car, it's a little different, but they want 40, 50 extra horsepower and still go through tech. Now, that's what I really enjoy doing, is pushing the limits of a motor as far as I can and watching it go through tech and watching the guy kind of look at it and go, I know there's something off on that, but I can't figure out what it is.
Right.
I'm not going to tell him.
No, of course not.
So, you know, it's cool just to elbow somebody and go, watch, he's close, but he ain't going to figure it out, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes you get hit, you know, and then you're like, oh, okay, well, he was smarter than I thought he was. I'll have to figure that out next time. I'll have to get around that. But I actually enjoy getting to do that.
Yeah. Well, the engine that we're doing in the Zed Sled Camaro, and those of you guys listening, John's graciously helped me, do this LS swap in my 78 Camaro, Project Zed Sled, Hands on Cars TV. It's a fun project. It's the stepchild F-body Camaro, the soft bumper cars. Mm-hmm. You can get them cheap, and it's still a second-gen F-body, and the aftermarket support mechanically is just second to nobody. And, of course, this LS revolution that's happened with small-block Chevrolet.
That's what I call it
that, too, because it's just amazing what you can pull out of these engines. So we picked up a 6-liter truck block from a friend of mine that is in Michigan that knows people that knows people that knows how to get things. Mm-hmm. And it was a warranty pull-out engine with a damaged crankshaft snout. And we're doing an article with CarCraft magazine, and John came down to share his knowledge and get this thing running. And, you know, it's not an exotic engine. But there's a challenge to it in the same. Number one, you're sticking it in a 25, 30 year old car.
Yep.
But also, things like the oiling in just a little bit of help with drain back. That's what you did, right?
Well, we're helping the oil come in through the pickup into the pump. Mm-hmm. Any 90 degree edge, you know, or sharp edge, we want to roll over or get rid of any 90 degrees that we can.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, fluid doesn't like to take 90-degree turns. They like to flow.
Yeah.
So anytime you can radius that, you'll help, you know.
Right.
And you may not save the world with what you're doing, but we can save the motor.
Right,
And I'm cool with that, you know. Or it's kind of like your heart. If your heart's not pumping blood, you're walking time bomb. If the motor's not pumping oil, you can be the smartest guy in the world, but he's fixing to kill over dead.
Yeah.
And that's all, you know. That's I more so than building big numbers, I like motors that live, that can take a pounding. You know, a lot of people don't realize on that show, some of those motors will get 75 pulls, and
75,
all you saw was four,
You
know, on the show.
Uh-huh.
But we're just yanking and yanking and yanking and yanking. You blow a shot with a jib, or I said something stupid, or mm-hmm. I saw something and pulled out of the, you know, run.
Yeah.
Whatever the case may be, well, the whole shot is over, so now you got to do another one. And then, you know, everybody switches out, and then they pull the camera in.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, it's kind of a circus deal. But, you know, I'm used to 7-8 pulls on the dyno, make a few changes, mm-hmm. send it on its way, and then you get to the TV show, and it's like, we're on pull number 34.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's time for a refresh almost.
Yeah, well, like I said, we're right next door to you guys. And after about day four, we just said, you know what, we got a show to make. We got to tape through it. We got to keep on rolling the camera. And, you know, so you're going to hear what sounds like a thunderstorm in the background of some of the old trucks and truck tech reruns. But that was John Bouchard doing multiple engine pulls on a big block, something or other.
Yeah, oh, that one, yeah. I remember that one, that 905 horsepower street big block I did. It was like 250 shot of nitrous running water meth. We had 36 degrees of time, and we didn't pull no time.
Yeah.
Pump gas I got that morning, and we start making pulls on it. And next thing you know, the owner of the company's coming in there going, I can hear that up front.
Oh, it was shaking our socket rails in the toolboxes next door, man.
Of course, everybody's looking around like, oh, no, we made him mad. And I'm like, well, you're welcome. You're welcome. I've been trying to do that. If I could get, you know, some nitro meth in here, I'd blow the windows out if I could pull a top fuel in here and light it off.
But that's funny. That's funny. But anyway, I wanted to kind of roundabout say I really appreciate your help on this engine.
Yeah, no
John.
Problem. This
and for me, it's an interesting challenge. We didn't even break the seal on the heads. It's a stock engine essentially, but but to go from, what are they rated, 360-ish from the factory?
I think they're roughly around 350, you know, horse and torque power in a 6-liter.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. See, that one's new. That one's very new. It's got an LS3 head on it.
Yeah, it's a 2013.
Yeah, so, you know, you don't get to take too many of those and start working on them, you know.
Yeah.
Excuse me. You may get to do a cam swap in them and all that kind of stuff. You know, nobody really tears their motor apart after they come home from the dealership.
Yeah.
It's just not what people do.
And this engine's so fresh that it's ridiculously fresh.
There really wasn't a reason to pull the heads off. We swapped the springs on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, push rods. We put a new set in there, but we're pretty good on measurement there. I double checked it, but it's, you know, spot on the money.
Yeah.
A cam, you know, we put the double roller timing set on it for a little bit more, you know, valve train stability and cam timing. You know, that motor will probably, you know, by the time you put headers on it, a good intake, a good tune in that cam will probably do 100 better.
I know. That's crazy.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, and big shout out and thank you very much to Comp Cams and all of their support.
Absolutely.
You know, during this build, we're doing an article for CarCraft magazine as well on repairing the crankshafts now, which are the bolts strip out. It's a torque to yield bolt. There's about 7/8 of an inch of thread engagement at the bottom end of the crank, and people are just, apparently it's a more and more common problem.
Well, it's getting there because the motor is getting a little bit older. It's about 10 years old now. Yeah. I mean, maybe a little bit before that, but it came out, I guess, the first vehicle was 97 that had one.
Right.
And I'll be honest with you, the biggest thing these guys are doing, and anything I could tell them at home that might help them, is when you install a balancer, you need to have the tool. Mm-hmm. It's a big old long bolt. I think Summit Racing's got one for like $45. You can start to get them at the parts house now that have the extension in it for doing the LSs and the Hemis and the late model Fords. But you have to get it. It won't. You can't run it up. I mean, there's no keyway in the crank snout in an LS like there was in old small block Chevy. So the days, well, that and the threads, like you, as you know, are in the back of the snout and not in the front of the snout anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can't use the bolt to run it up on. It's going to grab a couple threads and it's going to pull them out.
Right, which allowed us to get a great engine and a nice LQ4 6-liter with full miles on it for pennies on the dollar, because typical wisdom says you got to pull that engine apart and replace the crankshaft. For a dealership, that's a junker now.
Yeah,
it's a boat anchor.
And when you called me, that was the first thing I thought was, yeah, I can fix that, no problem. We just got to tear it down and put the crank in the mill, stand it up. And, you know, that's when you were like, whoa, this thing's never been fired up yet. I don't want to take the crank out. And then I'm like, well, okay, crap, he won on that one. Because it's so much easier. You'd be surprised. It's actually easier for me to tear the motor down, clean everything, and put it back together. But that, you know, and then I got to looking on the internet, and this is becoming a problem.
Yeah.
But there's no fix for it yet. There's no dealership tool that I know of or that I could find. Head bolts, head threads, and things like that in the deck service, yes. So, you know, and I'd like to say thank you to TimeCert, because I called them. Well, I called Silver Seal, who sells TimeCerts. Mm-hmm. And they sent me a kit, and I worked with the gentleman there to get the thread, you know, the threads I needed, the length, yada, 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 to get me what I needed. We built a kit, but then I still had to go work on it from there at a buddy of mine, Neely Precision Shop, because they're one of the best machine shops on earth, and have them extend that for me. And I had to tell three different people what I was doing that never saw what I was doing, get a tool, make it what I want, and then come here having never even done it before. And say, yeah, KT, I can fix this, no problem.
Well,
I'm
going to
be here and watch this.
You didn't break a sweat. And I never lost faith in the whole process. It was just fascinating to me. Of course, it's not really my world. We're not blocking out a quarter panel. But at the same time, we just stood on a torque wrench at 200 foot-pounds, and the repair held. So
absolutely.
Not only do you and I get the opportunity and the privilege of showing the guy at home how to fix something like that, but also helping to create a tool. So, dude, this is awesome.
It's been really, really fun on this one. I really enjoyed it. I'm going to send that back. I'm going to get back with Silver Seal and TimeCert and try to maybe make that a little bit better, because, like I said, I had to take one machine in at Neely and all that and make something. Send them back my specs, give them my ideas, and hopefully come up with a kit so that the next guy at home comes across a $2,000 brand new engine or whatever the case may be, and it's got a broken bolt. Like, hey, I've seen that in a magazine article.
The guy makes a mistake at home, screws his up by trying to use the wrong balancer, and now he's got a chance to fix it.
Yeah, so, exactly.
I mean, well done, my friend.
Exactly. A $200 repair kit is a lot easier than, you know what I mean? It's two, three times that just to get me to put it back together, and I haven't torn it down or fixed anything.
And you can do it with the engine in the car.
Exactly. And that is what... One thing I've had to adjust to here lately, especially with these new engines, is I've had to get into a little bit more of a mechanical role.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go out to a guy's shop now, and I'll do his cam swap for him if he wants to. I need four jack stands. I'll bring the tools, and we can take it out and put it in a day or two. Because I'm not going to be able to talk him out to pulling the whole motor and let me put a stroker kit in it and all that other.
Right.
But I could still come out. And I think the last one I did on a 2010 Camaro, it was a mild cam, took it down to DBR Performance and had him tune it, which is the best place I've been to so far. Just a cheap stainless exhaust and a cold air intake, and it did almost 500 to the tires, and the motor had 125,000 miles on it when I did the cam swap.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, you don't have to spend a whole lot of money in these late model cars to have big power.
Yeah, and big reliable power.
Absolutely, good, and do another 100,000.
Which is why we're putting a 6-liter in a 78 Camaro.
Yes, sir. And we spec the cam, you know, we put a custom ground cam in that. I got with Matt Maxwell at Comp on that, and we came up with something that ought to work really good for you naturally aspirated, but as well take a nitrous hit and or blower turbo, some type of force induction application later. We're still at a 114, so It's not going to be as wild as it could on all motor, but if you put 7 pounds to it, I mean, you're talking about raising 200 horsepower.
Yeah, which you is, know. You know what I drive. I've become a huge fan of forced induction. The Lightning engine in my 2000 Harley truck, the 4.6 supercharged out of an 04 Cobra in Jaded. I am crazy about forced induction. Just about, guys that are listening and have followed along with the Zed Sled project, it's not going to be long, naturally aspirated. There's going to be some fun factor. We got to get it up and running. But anyways, John, I wanted to ask you as well. I always ask people on Shop Talk if you'd like to give a shout out to people that have maybe mentored you or been important to you in your growth as being an engine builder or just a human being. Is there anybody that you want to just give a big thanks to?
Well, absolutely, man. I'm glad you asked that because first and foremost, you know, I am somewhat of a biblical man, and I don't think we get anywhere in life without a little bit of help in that area. But I'd really like to thank my wife because, you know, through Iraq, through moving all the time and months and years on end out of town. I mean, the first couple of years we lived, you know, lived together, we didn't live together.
Yeah.
We had a house, but I didn't know where it was.
Yeah.
I was gone all the time, you know what I mean? And then just whatever I wanted to do, hey, I'm going to go work for a NASCAR team. I'm going to go be on TV. I'm going to go do this. And every time she's just like, yeah, whatever you want to do, you know what I mean? She's always been good to me. And Frank and Tommy up there at the machine shop, they've been like dads to me.
Yeah.
Like I said, I could disappear for 6 months and come back in and start working, and they just say, hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
I take all my work there, but they take the time, you know. I remember Frank's favorite saying to me was always, you know, you can't just build Chevys here. You got to learn how to build everything. We do everything from 40 model Willises to 25 model Dodges to, you know, to late model LS and Coyote stuff. So those two guys have had a major impact on my life, you know, along with my shop teacher. He was a cool guy. He kind of got the bug started. He was kind of, you know, like, you know, while they're all working on brakes and dirty stuff, you know, you can come over here and work on these engines. And then, of course, it was like, what?
Uh-huh.
We can do this?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. I'm sold. I'll stay. I'll stay right here. Yeah. So, those three, four people have been very – without them, I couldn't have gotten to where I am now.
Yeah.
You know, and I have a pretty headstrong, I'm not going to take no for an answer kind of deal. I've worked for free, and I've done a lot of stuff to get my foot in the door.
Yeah.
But once I did, you know, my wife and Tommy and Frank and my shop teacher, you know, I owe a lot to and would do anything for them if they asked me.
Yeah. Well, very cool. Very cool. Yeah. And what would we do without our wives? I don't know, man. I mean,
I don't want to know, man. I'll be honest with you. People ask how long you've been married, and I tell them I've been house broke for 13 years. I like being house broke. You know what I mean? I don't want to be outside in the doghouse on a chain. I like to sit on the couch and all that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she's not going to tell you the same stories I am. She's going to say the world's completely different. But I do what I'm told, and I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. I enjoy it.
Well, John, I look for huge things in your future. I'm excited about seeing what's going to happen for you next. And can't talk about it right now, but you and I have got some plans down the road. We're going to do some fun stuff.
Absolutely.
And it's just, I don't know, it's a cool thing to, it was a difficult decision for me to leave that show, and as it was for you, I know, but it's just the same thing as when that opportunity came up. There's other opportunities out there, and I know you're going to rise to it. I know you're going to do great things in the future with John Bouchard Racing Engines.
I plan on it. We'll see how it goes.
Well, cool. Well, thanks for taking the time today, and we appreciate you.
Yeah, KT, thanks for letting me come out, man. I've had a good time these last couple days.
Awesome, man. Well, we'll see you down the road. Guys, you're listening to Shop Talk. I'm your host, Kevin Tates, and we are always brought to you by the Eastwood Company. Do the job right with Eastwood.